So welcome to another edition of Amana Podcast, a collective of people, places, things, and actions that transcend us, living through our higher virtues, what takes us off course, and how do we get back on. It gives me no greater pleasure than to have as our guest today, Russell Bishop. Say g'day, Russ.
G'day, mate.
Russell, you know, I don't like to give a lot of bios, so through our conversation, you know, who you are will come out of this. But what I will do in this case is give a little backstory of how you came into my world, and you came into my world long before I met you, and that being you being the creator of Insight Seminars. And when I was 15 years of age, my father was working for Digital Computers at the time, which is a pretty progressive corporate culture, and looking at how they could do things more effectively in a matrix system. And his boss said, go check out this program called Insight Seminars. It's around awareness. So he did that, became fanatical, and then put the pressure on me to take a teen program. I went to a graduation for an adult graduation and saw people hugging and carrying on. I thought, I want nothing to do with this. That's not what I'm about. But ended up taking it just to get him off my back. And it forever changed my life. My heart became awake in such a way that it hadn't before. The formal school system that I had been in was completely confusing to me because I was dyslexic and didn't really understand why I had to go or what it was about. So my first part of our conversation here is just to say thank you. and now coming into current times, and I have known you over the last 20 years, which has been a pleasure, I'd like to talk about your virtues and what does Russell care about, and particularly in this current time of let's call it COVID and the way society is transforming and hopefully transcending. What's going on for you, my friend, and what's got your attention and what are you caring about?
Well, thanks. Certainly really interesting and important questions. Just before we came on here, I was listening to a podcast you did earlier with our good friend Nat Sherratt. And part of that podcast, you guys were talking about sort of the distractions of the material world, mm-hmm. and how people seem to be getting caught up in that ever more. And I referenced that because it points to me something about a quality that isn't necessarily what are considered the seven virtues, mm-hmm. Although it is, if you look at the three of those that are the spiritual virtues, which are faith, hope, and love, the thing that matters most to me is caring, mm. and compassion. And, you know, it's been said, if we knew the pain of our worst enemy, you'd never hold another thing against them. Yeah. No one knows the secret hurt. And I think what's being revealed right now is the depth of hurt and pain in the world. And as people strive to ameliorate that pain, they seem to be focusing, as the world often has, into the material. If I only had enough of X, then I'd finally be okay. And of course, there's never enough of X to make that okayness show up. So that's sort of a sideways entry into this conversation.
Yeah, really lovely and distinct points in terms of the compassion and caring on a personal front. How do you exercise that for yourself with others? What takes you off track or out of that state? And how do you find your way back in?
Yeah, that's one of those kinds of questions that has about 1,800 variables to it.
It's discoursing.
You know, one of the things that I like to remind myself of, something that I didn't invent or create. It's just something that someone said, and I became aware of the truth of it, is that peace is present, but that doesn't mean I'm present with the peace. And when I look back over the arc of my life, I mean, I've been through a lot of different circumstances that range from being homeless when my father died to all kinds of events in the world, difficulties and challenges. But something that was always true was that I was always okay. It's just that the circumstance was less than exciting, but I was fine. And that's what I mean about peace is present. Mm-hmm. So part of what my challenge is, as I go through the day, is to watch myself get distracted by some thought or some external focus. And it's the most subtle of little shifts. As soon as I move out into the world, something about the world that's supposed to make my current experience better, I lose track of that sense of being okay, at being one, at being in the peace. And, our mutual friend John Roger would have said to us, you're not responsible for the thoughts that come into your head, only the ones you hold on to. And some of the work I've been doing recently has been looking at the very nature of the energetic of thought and how thought is actually communicated between human beings, just like a radio station sends out a signal and those with radios can hear them. Well, as it turns out, we can actually pick up on the thoughts of others. And so I have to be very careful as I go through the world, because I'm a pretty sensitive guy, as you are, to notice, is the thought that I'm entering into, is that mine? Or is that one that's going by and I latched on to it? And, when you look at the world right now, geopolitically, sociologically, people are latching onto the thoughts of one another and in so doing, amplifying those thoughts. Challengingly, for all of us, most of those thoughts that are being latched onto have a negative quality to them. An againstness or whatever. So yes. What I am trying to do is whenever I notice that inside of me is to move back into this notion of caring, which then means to be sensitive to the fact that all these other folks, they're dealing with the challenges of life the best way they know how in the moment. It just may not be the best way for them, but who am I to judge that? So that's when I have to just go into compassion and say, hey, God knows all the mistakes I've made. I certainly wouldn't want to stand in judgment for all of those kinds of mistakes. So I don't know if that's much of an answer, but it has some meaning inside of me. It's just really hard to articulate.
No, it definitely comes across. And I have two thoughts that show up as you're talking about that. One, I did work very closely with JR, as have you, John Roger, for our listeners, who is a spiritual teacher that I adhered to and listened to and learned a lot from. And one of the things that he worked consistently with was bringing in the light, the higher spiritual frequencies. So it almost would, I don't want to say wash out or drown out some of the irritative thought patterns we can get into, or the emotional irritations, but it certainly helped change the frequency. And his focus was very much around moving into that frequency, and let's say it another way, into the loving, which was very helpful for me to learn. Because the other part of this is what I do notice for myself in what you're sharing, because I relate to what you're sharing, is when my sensitivities are picked up and people are doing what they're doing, and I can move into compassion and understanding, yet I have and this is mine, of course, I have a tendency to separate myself because I don't want to be involved in that thought pattern. And that can end up being quite lonely. not that I'm a lonely person per se, I just recognize that it's like it draws me away from being involved in a lot of the disarray, I guess, of people's thinking. So I don't know how any of that you may relate to that, excuse me, or if you have a similar feeling or reaction that you care to give comment to.
Well, it's a good thing we have about 7 or 8 days for this call. There's so much packed into what you just said. I want to relate back to the Insight seminar just for a second, in that when I created that, we had a subtitle. We call it The Awakening Heart. And I think awakening is a really important process that we're all dealing with on a regular basis. The lovely thing I liked about the word awakening is that something that awakens was previously asleep, and that's obvious. Also obvious, but never thought of, is that something that is asleep was previously awake. And so in the work I do in the world, it still focuses on awakening and awareness, but something that John Rogers shared with me one day in a seminar when I was impatient about how slow I thought the group was, he said, well, you know, if the baby is sleeping, do you want to shake it awake so it'll grow faster?
Wow.
And it's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, so awakening is a natural process, and so is sleep.
Mm.
And so one of the things I have to be aware of myself is, am I going to sleep to that which I know, which goes to some of what you said about, well, we ask for the light.
Yeah.
Because the light is the core essence of loving. And if I have that, then I can extend that to others, out of my own consciousness, which is a frequency. So if I'm sending light to someone, not out of control, but just says, here, I just ask the light to be with you for your highest good and let it go, that's all fine. And that light may be something that that other person can sense within them as they awaken to it. But if they're currently asleep to it, that's fine, because God knows what I'm asleep to right now.
Mm.
One of the things that you said about people, and you didn't quite say it this way, but someone may be presenting something that I find difficult in their consciousness or their behavior or just whatever.
Yes.
I don't like being around that myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can choose not to be in their presence out of care and consideration for both of us, or I can choose not to be in their presence out of some kind of againstness or judgment.
Yes.
And if I separate out of that negativity of judgment and againstness, then I have that experience of being lonely.
Mm-hmm.
If I can, instead of separating away from, I move into that loving consciousness. That has, quantum physics really starts to show up here. That's the illusion of duality, when the fact is it's all one. So if I come into the oneness, I'm just fine, whether there's nobody around or tons of people around. But when I'm in that separateness of, well, your thought goes this way and that's wrong, I can be lonely in a crowd.
Yes. We were playing golf the other day, and you made a beautiful distinction between the spiritual ego and the physical ego, you know, and I think there's probably a lot of misrepresentations of how ego works. I think the generalized one would be ego's negative or bad. I think I relate to the ego, or the physical ego, is like an engine in the car. You know, it's got energy that you can move it in certain directions. But the spiritual ego has an attunement with it that has a naturalness of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I think if I can move that, my physical ego, to align into the spiritual ego, it's probably another way of saying what you're saying. You know, it's...
Yeah, absolutely. Again, that was something John Roger helped me with one day when I was really struggling with the ego part of me that wanted to make a big difference in the world.
Yeah.
Thinking that it was up to me. And he helped me understand that, the ego, that a personality can latch on to an idea and then think it's the idea is its own, like it's my idea. And that's a road to hell real fast. But if I view the ego as a tool, that if I go inwardly, like all spiritual traditions eventually say the path to spirit is an inward path. You know, even biblically, you know, where's heaven? It's within.
Yes.
So if I go in, then I can access the guidance of spirit, and then hence the spiritual ego. And that may be saying, hey, your light and love and your particular packaging is useful over here right now. And then I can use the tools of the human ego, which includes skills and experiences and capabilities, to move into that area and allow that higher work to take place. The second I'm in that, though, becomes the temptation that says, hey, look at all the good I'm doing.
Yes.
And
it gets
ego
a
likes
little
that.
Tricky. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
One of the things we spoke about the other day also, which is an offering you offered to me, which is to do some work with Inez, your lovely wife. And one of the things that you had mentioned was vision work. And not to say this is entirely the work that I'd be doing with her, but you'd mentioned a couple of things. And vision work with the experience, you know, like what's the experience that you're looking for? And this is something that Insight certainly taps into through a series of questions.
Right.
But I'm curious for you, Russell, what this time of your life, what are the experiences that you're looking for and how are you manifesting that for yourself?
Well, yeah, that's been sort of ever since I had my first major wake-up call, which was a long time ago now, some over 50 years. I got hit by a tear gas canister on a strike line at UC Berkeley. Mm. So this little anecdote is helpful to your question. And I picked it up to throw it back because that's what they told us to do. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize this thing was going to be scorching hot. And I had this very odd, and so far as I know, the only conscious experience I've had of it. Suddenly, I was somehow 20, 30 feet away from myself up in the air looking back, and I could see myself. Just like I could look at my hand now and see my hand, I could look and see me. And I heard myself screaming, "Why don't you idiots love us?" Of course, I cleaned that language up a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, bam, I was back inside my body, dropped the tear gas canister, and this wave of awareness came over me that said, hey, this is supposed to be about loving and caring and peace, and my strategy was yell, scream, and throw things. So disconnect, disconnect, disconnect. And that put me on the path that leads right up to today and to your question. And that's that I began to distinguish between what I do and what experience I'm hoping to have as a result of it.
Yes.
Which then led me into what do I have or what am I pursuing, you know, like money, job, house, car, whatever, mm-hmm. and what experience am I hoping for? And the experience I'm hoping for is still that very one I attuned to 50-some years ago. It's about inner peace. It's about loving. It's about caring. And if I want more loving, caring, and peace in the world, then it's not about, hey, you need to be more loving. It's like, how can I be more loving? How can I be more caring? And the more I focus on that in the world, I find, again, what am I following thought-wise? What am I moving into? Do I think something needs to change? And I mean, you know, if you don't change your direction, you may wind up where you're heading, I think is a misquote of Lao Tzu. So if I'm focusing into the world, I'll wind up in the world. If I'm focusing into loving and caring, I'll wind up there. Then it's just a question of noticing if I've strayed away, there's always a fork in the road that leads me back. I just have to be wise enough to notice, A, I'm not where I wished to be. Now, how do I get back into it? And that's always a path inward.
Yes. And sometimes, at least I experience this, I think it's a human trait. We can't always see ourselves clearly, particularly when we're in our stuff, you know, and apostrophes or the rabbit ears around stuff there or capitalized. I talk about there's an inner committee that I go to, which is a like an inner council called my higher self, Jesus, the traveler. There's these different kind of frequencies that I'll attune to so I can get a greater clarity. And there's people in the world that often may have, holding a focus that would have some of those, you know, holding wisdom that I'm looking for. And I'm curious for yourself, where do you go? Because I find you an extremely aware, attuned person. You know, where do you go when you're not seeing things clearly?
Yeah, that's to me, that's such an important question. I'm just finishing a whole book on the topic. And I call it the difference between self-talk and soul-talk. And my self-talk, I mean, I have a gift that's a curse in some ways, in that I can see things in terms of what's missing and what would make it better. And that turns often into criticism. So instead of noticing, well, if we add this, things will be better, it's like, what's the wrong with you? That thing's missing. And inwardly, the soul talk is saying, hey, it's all fine. Now, how would you go about creating that which you want more of? And so I'd like to do a meditation that starts with, I'll write a few notes out about what I want to be different in the world or about me or, you know, whatever. And then I'll just do some breathing and get inside and I'll just ask for the light to fill, surround, protect me. And then I ask for my inner teacher, my inner master to show up. And I generally tend to use a generic term like that, because sometimes it's Jesus and sometimes it's John Roger and sometimes it's Buddha and sometimes it's the guy next door.
Yes.
Because the spirit can take any form. But once that's present, once I have a sense of that presence being present, I will then literally imagine that it's sitting or standing in front of me and say, well, here, Master, is what I've been thinking about. And then let it have a voice and comment back. And what comes back is never out of the self-talk. It's always out of that, what I call soul talk or the true self.
Mm.
And I get a lot of guidance that way. I sometimes will, in addition to doing that as a meditation, I'll literally sit in my computer and imagine I'm writing a script. And I'll say, Russell. And then I'll ask a question and type it. Mm-hmm. And then I'll say, Inner Master. And then I'll just type whatever I hear.
Mm-hmm.
And go back and forth like that. And it's amazing if I get the ego and the mind out of the way and just let the heart resonate, wisdom shows up.
There's a process, I'm imagining you developed it or evolved it, it's through insight, which sounds similar, is that of the sanctuary.
Absolutely.
Creating your own sanctuary, and there's a guided meditation that goes with that that's really beautiful, and going in and finding that inner master for those answers. At that time, I still vividly remember the first time that I ever did that. And you know, there's another term that I heard JR use a lot that I have held on to and focused with, and as creating your own portable paradise. You know, so these things are walking with us. They're not They're not something that I've got to go grab from the store every day. And so talk a little bit, share perhaps a little bit more about this book, Russell, and how you foresee. So let's move into the future a little bit here of what you would like to share or the message that's coming through the book.
Well, the message is that it's along that similar line of peace is present. Mm-hmm. My well-being is always present. And the question becomes, am I listening to a voice that has been sort of trained by outside influences, whether it's parents or the world or advertising or whatever, and it's telling me what I should want?
Mm.
And listening to the deeper place inside, the one that doesn't have to go anywhere to find peace. It just has to be with the peace. So, I mean, this may sound esoteric to folks who haven't had much practice with it, but it's about a whole different set of exercises and awarenesses that say, hey, if something is happening outside and you like it, that's one thing, keep going. But if there's something out there you don't like, rather than trying to change the outside, what can you do to change the inside?
Yes.
And as I do that, what miraculously happens is new choices appear to me, and I say they're choices that have been hiding in plain sight.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I have a friend here in Santa Barbara. His name is Mitchell, and he used to be a cable car gripman in San Francisco, and he was riding to work one day on his motorcycle when a laundry van ran the red light, crashed into him. The gas tank exploded and it burned his face off. Wow. And burnt all of his fingers and thumbs off because he had no gloves on. And after 3 years of a hell of a lot of painful reconstruction and therapy, he still looked like a horror story. And then he was in a small plane crash and he wound up paralyzed.
Oh, wow.
And he has an amazing book. It's called It's Not What Happens to You, It's What You Do About It.
Yeah.
And his message there was, before I was paralyzed, there were 10,000 things there I could do. Now there's 9,000. Should I lament the 1,000 I lost or celebrate the 9,000 I have? And that's a version of soul talk wisdom.
Mm.
It says, hey, you can focus on what appears to have been lost and miss all that's there to be gained. And Mitchell has become a world-famous public speaker, author, and entrepreneur. And he just happens to have what looks to be a physical challenge to other people. But for him, this is like, yeah, okay, so you're blonde and I'm brunette.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't change my life circumstance unless I want it to.
Yeah, that's powerful when it comes from that level of experience. Both of us have danced in the business world, and no doubt, I think we've been on the same, not the same path, but that of a management consultant, so going in and looking at assessing companies, what's working for them, what's not working for them. And then there's, the bigger animal of the economics and the business environments that's emerged over the years. And if we were to come back to this statement of, keep your feet on the ground and reach for the stars, and I don't know if that's a good statement or not. I'm still trying to figure that one out. Maybe I just got to immerse myself in the stars some days. But there is a practicality to this level. And I do notice people that I've worked with, or I do notice people around who are good people, have good virtues, but during to the stress, they let these things slide a little bit more, or their integrity slide, and the business, because of the need of the financial wants that they're going for, and maybe there's just a greater level of mastery available to that. But maybe you could speak to the business world, how you foresee some of its transformation at this time and things that you've helped people with?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question because it's still relevant to me in some of the work that I do on the consulting side. But that's also identical to the work I do on the coaching side.
Mm.
And what makes it identical is that I like to ask whether it's an owner-operator or a board of directors or an individual, what matters to you and why? And along that line, it often goes into the business world about, so what's your purpose and mission? And I like to write that up on an easel pad so they all see it. Rarely can everybody in the room say the same thing, but they can get close.
Mm-hmm.
So we get something up on the easel pad, and at the end of it, I turn the period into a comma, and I write so, two words, so that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing X so that something else takes place. And we will pursue that, and then so that, and then so that, and eventually it lands on something that has real meaning and value. Now, if the only so that is so that I can get richer than God, well, there's people pursuing that.
Yes.
But I like to ask people, are you here to make any difference? Or are you here to make a difference worth making? And what's that? And what begins to emerge is as people focus on external circumstances, so it could be revenue, it could be sales, it could be marketing, it could be operations, as though that's going to make something important happen. No, those are tools that we use to make something important happen. We just have to understand what that something important is. And you may be seeing this too, and depending on who's listening, but people under 40 and certainly people under 30 these days are rising up all over the place going, wait a minute, this isn't worth doing. There's no real value or mission here. And there's a huge wave of resignations taking place across the country right now today. People saying, I'm not going back to that place. Now, some of it is because of COVID and some of it's because of fear, but a whole bunch of it is because there's no mission there. There's no value there. There's no anything. And different of those folks are aware or less aware that what's happening is they're resonating and connecting with something in their heart where something matters, mm-hmm. as the distinction between what's resonant in their mind or emotions that appear to matter. And so I think the main thing that I like to work with is the so that.
Yes.
And really help folks. Now, I do a lot of not-for-profit consulting.
Mm-hmm.
And in that world, I always change their language. They usually say they're nonprofit. And I say, well, if you keep saying you're nonprofit, you won't have one and then you'll die.
Yes.
A friend of mine says, hey, no margin, no mission.
Yeah, that's great.
It's pretty crisp, right?
Yeah.
So it takes a while for some not-for-profit organizations to understand that they don't have to have the purpose of profit. They're not for profit, but they better have one or they'll be gone. And so people used to say to me about Insight, well, isn't this spiritual teaching and shouldn't it be free? And I would say the teaching is free. And they say, what do you mean you charged us $250 for this class? And I say, well, that was for the heat, the lights, the room, the staff, the whatever. The teaching's free. What do you mean it's free? Well, my God, I can point you to thousands and thousands of books where all these teachings are.
Yes.
So sometimes you need to have a fee for people to pay attention. But the reality is it takes a certain level of resource to make the work available. So let's not feel bad about that. But what they're really concerned about is, are they close to falling into the temptation of greed?
Yes.
And that's always in the world because there's always another bright, shiny object.
Yeah, it's part of the attachment, attraction mm-hmm. game. And one of the things that I look at, and it's been around forever, let's take it back to you know, dictators and slavery, and we could go back through history. But I see that kind of emerging again in the business world, obviously in a different form, but there's usually a strong dictator, you know, who believes they're smarter than everyone else. And, you know, these people often, the staff become drones, you know, they go like, I need a paycheck, so I'll just shut up and get along. And it certainly has affected me navigating through the business world, because you can be working with a good business and yet they've got to interact with vendors and everything else. And therein lies, of course, the opportunity. And as you were mentioning around younger people going, I don't want this path anymore, or this method, or this this modality, this way of being. And yet you can spring to purpose and you can find your internal purpose. And I think a lot of the self-help world has tapped into a lot of that these days. And people, you know, what's the point each day, and trying to make their lives and habits more effective, from yoga to meditation to breathing to, you know, stress-reducing exercises to intention exercises. But what I haven't, I've looked at it a lot. I've solved, not solved, I shouldn't say solved, but some of the people that I've found in models that have helped me, one in particular is Ken Wilber with Integral Thinking. And the other one is Spiral Dynamics, Haas Graves with Spiral Dynamics, looking at meme codes. Now, I'm not going to take a big dive into those theories, but they have presented answers, at least for me, or directions of how society shifts. But I do think society as a whole, if I look at the news, if I look at the masses, don't know where they're going with all of this. So they may pick up purpose, but what's the point? And I'm curious for you, Russell, like on a bigger scale, because you have worked on big scales. I remember you doing some work with the paradigm and the book called Getting to Yes, which I think is a really powerful tool of how negotiation can play out and people can meet. They don't need to agree per se, but they can get to a healthy way forward, hopefully. But anything on the bigger scale of things that you see happening that you tap into or look to for resources for society or business at large?
Well, I think the challenge there, Mark, is that there's thousands of pretty decent books out there.
Mm.
But they become prescriptive.
Yes.
And they said, you should do this, even if they don't say you should.
Yes.
When they clean it up is, well, you could do this, which is just code word for you should. you know, a theme that showed up in business, quite a few years ago, and is still out there, is about mentors.
Yes.
And mentoring seems like, ooh, what a cool thing. Everyone should have a mentor. And I at one point I was with a very large corporation who decided everyone needed a mentor. The only problem with that is that mentoring took place prior to everybody saying it should take place organically. You know, you and I might have bumped into each other and I might have said, well, hey, can you help support me? And then you became my mentor because we had a connection and a caring. Well, now you're going to assign a mentor? Well, good luck with that. if you want to, just this morning in my little Apple news feed, I saw a little article about, it was called The Great Resignation. And for listeners, if you Google those two words, Great Resignation plus Inc., I-N-C, that's the Inc. magazine. There's an article there that says, hey, there's this huge wave of resignations coming. It's already begun. And what can you do about it? And their fundamental answer is caring. Mm. And caring doesn't mean that you stock energy drinks in the refrigerator or you put a ping pong table in and, you know, right, that kind of stuff. It means, do you actually know who's working in your organization? And do you actually care about their circumstances? And that's what people are fundamentally looking for, is the experience of caring, not the symbols of caring. So yeah. I think that's, if I could put anything into a business at large, it would be caring.
Yeah, really well said. It's and they're not always easy to do or implement. Maybe easy in if you bring it into the moment. But I find most people in the business world in a very busy, you know, they get in the busy trap. So they're moving from one thing to another and these things slide. So I guess that becomes the work.
Well, it, this is where, I think a mutual friend of ours, Rick Edelstein, who was a great director and writer for Hollywood, he did acting classes. And I think he had a class he called Tuning the Human Instrument.
Mm.
And that's so critical. You know, everybody I know, you, I'm sure, have had this experience as well. At some time or another in life, have sort of slapped themselves upside the head when something went wrong and said, oh, God, I knew it.
Yes.
We knew it was going to blow up. We did it anyway, and it blew up. And the inverse of that's true. Something happened. It went really, really well, and we threw our hands in the air and went, yes, I knew it. And I ask people, what's the difference between, oh, shit, I knew it, and, oh, yes, I knew it? And the only difference is paying attention.
Yes. Reminds me of my putting.
Yes. But the important part about that is, and our shared teacher used to say, hey, Russell, hey, Mark, the information is available to you. The only question is, are you available to the information? And that's not just a little throwaway line. It means there's a whole lot of information in our, it's just like, even if you're not listening to the BBC radio right now, BBC radio's in the room, meaning the frequency. And if you knew how to tune to the frequency, you could hear it. That's why they have radios. But we are the radio as human beings. So in working with other people in organizations, it's how do we become sensitive to and aware so we can make choices that follow the basic need all of us have to feel cared for and to allow ourselves to care. I used to do some programs with teachers, and I would always ask the teacher, how many times have you started a class in the morning and they're not with you? Did you ever stop to think about what did that kid deal with last night?
Mm.
Are they the child of an abusive family? Are they a single parent? Did that parent even come home last night? Were there drugs in the house? I mean, there's so many different things about what that kid may be dealing with. Did they even have breakfast?
Yeah.
And you're saying, hey, turn your mind on.
Yes.
Well, I later translated that to management and say, hey, manager, that person walked in the front door. What did they walk in with? Maybe they walked in with my husband's wife was abusive or didn't come home or was drunk or strung out on drugs or my kid didn't come home or the kid's on drugs. You know, those are very human issues. And if we don't attend to those and we simply treat the person as a tool in our organization, it becomes what you were talking about a few minutes ago. It's tantamount to having slaves.
Yeah. Well, I just have a great sense of gratitude. There is so much that we could talk about, Russell. There's so many things that I have learned from you, and not always directly, but I've certainly listened to a lot of what you've had to say. The beautiful metaphors, you've simplified so much for me in terms of some bigger audacious questions that I've probably had in my life and simplified it in such a way that makes it very practical. From even, you know, the getting things done brand, if you will. I always loved your metaphor of the fireman and the fire truck and being prepared for what's coming next. And I use that a lot in my own life. Like, how do I prepare myself for what's coming next so I'm ready? So I hope our listeners can take away something here where they go, well, this helps me prepare to be ready for what, hopefully more of what you want, you know, of what your heart's looking for, what you're here for. Is there a last message here, because we're just coming up on time, Russell, that you would like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, indeed. It goes back to a time I was facilitating an insight seminar, and John Roger was a co-facilitator. And there was somebody in the room who we were trying to help with an issue, and the person seemed to be pretty resistant to me, and they were like, putty in the hands of a master with John Roger. And on the break, he said, did you notice that the things you had to say to, I'll call him Fred, mm-hmm. he seemed to resist. And then I said the same things to him, and he just got it. And I was kind of went, well, sure, because that's you. And he said, no, it's not that. This is the information is the same, but the carrier wave is different. What do you mean carrier wave? He says, well, you know, ABC television is a frequency, and the content that's on at 10 a.m. is different from the content at 11 a.m., but the carrier wave is always the same. Mm. You, Russell, have a carrier wave sometimes, not always, but sometimes, that is of criticism. And the person feels the carrier wave of criticism before they hear the information, and that makes it hard for them to hear the information. I, John Roger, have a carrier wave of loving. And I put that loving or caring carrier wave, and then the information rides on that. And the first thing the person feels is loved and cared for. And that makes the information more receivable. I think that's what we need in the world. More carrier waves of caring and loving.
Yeah, well said. And for the podcast notes, which I'll put them into, is there a way people could reach out to you, contact you, and maybe just give a little shout out to some of your services that you offer, or how people could
Absolutely.
Interact with you?
My website is my name, russellbishop.com. And Russell has two S's and two L's. And if they want to email me, the email is equally hard. It's russell@russellbishop.com.
Very good. There's all that practicality once again.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, my friend. I look forward to more for us in however that form shows up. I have that intent. It was very nice to see you again the other day, and brought back a lot of memories of how wonderful you are and significant in my life. And once again, only have gratitude for all your good works over these years, and that you are in my life, and it's a real blessing to me.
Well, thank you, Mark. It's a mutual admiration society, obviously. So you have served and continue to. So thank you for your great contributions as well.
All right. Bye for now.